a colleague of mine and has done an amazing work in our community, especially. She is from Cal State Long Beach. She is the program director of she doesn't have a whole lot of time, so I'm going to go ahead and hand it over to her, and she can give you a brief introduction.
And I want to apologize for getting here a little bit late. This is like the fourth or third year in a row where I have presentations exactly at the same time, so I'm running. Can I go first in this one? So I apologize. I want to talk a little bit about, does anybody know who NCLR is? I just want to, National Council of La Raza, the largest Latino advocacy organization for Latinos in the U.S. And we have a center, which is the NCLR CSULB Center for Latino Community Health. It kind of started around a lot of this work in different community-based organizations, and then it kind of grew out of my house. And so we decided that we needed a space that was just a little bit bigger than my kitchen and dining room and study and different things like that. So now we actually have a center, so we're really, really excited. And I've got some other information at the end if anyone wants any more information about us. I'd love to give that to you. And I want to acknowledge my co-authors, Ana Kariki, who was the project coordinator on the first initiative that we did, Laura Diana, who's in our office, in our crowd right now, Dr. Laura Diana, who helped us with the analysis, Gabriela Diaz, who's now coordinating the Salud Es Cultura Protégete project, which is just, there's a segue of projects that I'm going to try to get to, Rosana Scolari, America Jones from El Paso, and Ella Tardy from Hattiesburg, because we, through this process, we really decided to kind of redefine the Latino South. So, I think one of the things that's really important to point out is that Latinos experience HIV in a very markedly different way than any other racial ethnic groups. And as now they comprise 15.3% of the U.S. population, but 19% of those living with AIDS, and 24.8% of HIV diagnosis. And this is despite the fact that we don't have data on 40% of the Latino population, and we probably won't have HIV-related data on 40% of the Latino population until about 2012, 2013, because they come from states that have historically reported by code, and they're just starting to report by name. So we're missing a lot of HIV incidence data for a population, especially if you're considering California, Illinois, Massachusetts. So we don't have a real clear picture about these new rates of infection. Latinos are more likely to report AIDS as the second most urgent health problem. So it's not that Latinos aren't cognizant of it being an issue, which is often an excuse that's used, aside from cancer. So this is something that people are really very, very cognizant, very aware of. And they're the only racial and ethnic group to experience a doubling of heterosexual infections since 2001. So this is something that we need to take a really careful look at as well in terms of that experience. The other thing that's really important is that self-report in terms of HIV testing needs to be fed out to a certain extent, because Latinos often believe that HIV testing is conducted as a result of their routine visits, right? Just like getting your blood pressure taken, getting your heart rate taken, if blood is drawn or if anything else happens, there's a belief that they've been HIV tested. So you really need to make sure that that's the truth, to test late in the course of their infection, to have a diagnosis of AIDS within 1 year of testing, of learning of their HIV infection, and they're more likely to die within 18 months of learning of their HIV infection than any other racial or ethnic group. So the other thing that's important is not only do they lack access to care, but they lack access to care which is culturally and linguistically relevant. And this is very, very key, and this is where the promotores, and what was really nice listening to Leticia's presentation for me is that this was kind of came from, it really gave a historical context of how we began the Promotores program and why the San Isidro Promotores are just so good. They help us with, it's really where the site where I'm really able to see the community-based participatory research methods just come to task. And we've been working with them. Rosanna and I were thinking about when, and I think we started in 2003, and there was a little preliminary work through a national needs assessment that was done before that. But in 2003, we've been working through a number of different projects, and the segue from project to project has just been amazing because the trust, or as we say in Spanish, the confianza that we have, if I bring down something that they don't like, it's completely, and they're always right. They'll tell me, you know what, no, no, eso no, eso no. And they really guide the process on within every single facet, including the evaluation. So it's just been absolutely wonderful to work with them. Institutional barriers to care, right? We've talked about immigration status, language, cultural competency, cost, transportation, lack of knowledge of where to go, proximity, child care, and these are all formidable barriers to health services. Disproportionate rates of HIV/AIDS, more likely to underutilize services, and have been identified as a high-risk group for depression, anxiety, and chemical use and dependency, which can be precursors to HIV risk behavior. And I was just sitting with a colleague last night talking about the age of initiation of methamphetamine in Tijuana now is 11. So this is what we're dealing with. And so promotores, why promotores? And I have all of these slides photocopied, and I have a lot of them. So I'm going to fly through them, but they're all at the back, so you guys can pick these up. Developed in line with Freirean thought, the pedagogy of the oppressed. It's a model used by the World Health Organization. So this is used in a lot of other different places and is just starting to resonate within the U.S. Uses community resources, leaves skill sets within target communities, recreates social support mechanisms that are often lost with immigration. So communities, there's a lot of social support within many Latino communities that when people immigrate, they just lose. And the promotores are really able to rekindle this, and I think that's very important and very in line with what Leticia's findings were. Is particularly effective within communities that have had little access to culturally, linguistically relevant care, and can be used to interpret the bureaucratic healthcare system of the U.S. So how does Promoteria work, and why is it working now here? Basically, the U.S. healthcare system is failing. So we need best practices that are built with a community focus in mind, and we need new paradigms for sustainability and legitimacy. And it's amazing because we started with one project, which built on another project, which built on another project, which built on another project. So it's not like anyone has given us 6 years of streamlined funding. These are year-long projects, but based on what we've been able to do and the results and just the super effective work of the promotores, we've been able to continue. So, you know, and the need for building promotores models to reduce and eliminate health disparities. So, you know, and promotores call themselves in all different ways, right? We have comadres when they're just promotoras, we have amigos, we have what are some of the other madrinas, padrinos, et cetera, et cetera. But they really can be, you know, often referred to as community health workers or lay health workers. They serve as advocates, they serve as educators, they serve as counselors, they serve as translators, they also serve as friends, right? Which is very different than our very objective healthcare system where we're supposed to limit the responses that we have, where we're not supposed to engage in certain types of interactions or reveal personal information. The promotores can do this. Mentors, network providers, and evaluators. We also have our promotores working with us in evaluation. We train them in evaluation so they understand why. It's not just, you know, can you please fill out this have everybody fill out this piece of paper. It's really understanding what this is. The models need to be culturally relevant. They need to employ different strategies for community outreach. Many of those strategies are generated at the promotores level. They know how to get to the population much better than I would, right, coming from outside the population. The evaluation needs to employ a mixed methods approach. Models need to have the flexibility to respond to the different changing contexts of what's going on with the community. And there have been some interesting findings around that because we've been looking for so long with this Hispanic paradox and looking at how Latinos are actually healthier at the time that they immigrate to the U.S. and then their health begins to deteriorate as they acculturate. We're finding in some other, and these are very, very preliminary results, but in some other studies that we're doing that right now that might not be the case because of what immigration is doing, right? And because of all of the raids and the mental health effects and the stress that's associated with being an immigrant in the U.S. So we need champions and visionaries to move forward. We need collaboration and inclusiveness in developing and decision-making, an understanding of partnership with elements of system, community organizations, and other health workers, individuals, and families. So really focusing on familismo as well, creating and targeting training for the roles and interventions the promotores de salud will perform, targeted interventions specifically to find activities for the promotores, ongoing high-quality accountability and philosophy of action reflected in the outcomes, quantitative and qualitative, as well as cost-effectiveness, and diversified funding and linkages with policymakers leaning toward permanent and sustainable source. And I don't know, there's a bill right now that Hilda Solis is working on to be able to make sure that promotores are included in our healthcare reform in the way that we think about it. But this is the model, this is a CHOM or community health outreach model, and it utilizes social action theories, participatory research, an ecological perspective, behavioral change theories, and working with a train-the-trainer model. And we're looking at how community impacts community partners, process dimensions, and Latino health promotion, and how the Hispanic family-based health education can impact overall community health. So in terms of what we do what we call charlas, and sometimes they're referred to as pláticas as well, and they're just discussion groups, and they can be individual, they can be within a group. It really depends on the context of the interaction at that time. And the promotores are very good at bridging that gap so they can provide the referrals that people need to get to access care. Health provider partners, the promotores also can work with healthcare providers, right? Kind of not as a nurse assistant in any way, but it's kind of a constant link, right? Providing translation, providing contextual assistance, understanding, et cetera, et cetera. So where does the education take place? Obviously in the clinics, obviously in the healthcare organizations, but also in parks, in schools, in CVOs, churches, gyms, markets, health fairs, youth centers, malls, beauty salons, et cetera, et cetera. The border crossing is a perfect place, right? Trolley stops, basically anywhere. Baby showers, et cetera, et cetera. So what are the characteristics? Obviously, they're community leaders. They're involved in their neighborhoods and oftentimes their children's schools. They know how to build networks. They're not afraid to ask questions. They're knowledgeable of the methods that would best serve their communities. And they have the advocacy skills necessary to serve as spokespeople for their communities. And they also have compassion, and they're not afraid to show their compassion. They're low-level versus highly trained promotores. There's some issues around credentialing, because if we do have promotores credentials, are we going to lose out on any promotor or promotora who might be undocumented, therefore missing this very, very vulnerable population who probably needs the services more than many others? Promotores bring diverse community-based outreach experience. Many promotores are highly educated. In Miami, we have promotores who are physicians in their countries of origin and are working here as promotores. Trainings have multiple components and are guided by advocacy skills development and the topics at hand. Trainings range in length and complexity. And best practices have not been established. And I'm always, although I would love best practices from an academic standpoint, I always think if we don't allow for a lot of flexibility, are we going to be able to contextualize what might be a best practice in one region versus a best practices in another? They should be supported by culturally linguistically relevant materials and work to develop the materials. And I have the Salud es Cultura Protégete kit here if anyone wants to take a look at it. We also have some brochures that the promotores have worked with us in development. Materials should be developed in another language and generic to the language. So we often use Latinos from different countries to really provide that pan-Latino perspective. We do it all in Spanish first and then translate back. Many promotores are highly educated in their countries of origin and can provide vital insight. We use focus groups to test the materials, all kinds of things from color to text, et cetera, et cetera. I talked about this, so I'm going to skip through it. I want to talk a little bit about the Latino Health Belief Model. We use the Latino Health Belief Model to inform, it's just kind of a basic values perspective that we use when we're designing our programs. And the Latino Health Belief Model informs several cultural constructs specific but not inclusive to diverse Latino subgroups. The LHBM is designed to assist health and human service providers in establishing more effective and meaningful patient-client-provider relationships with Latinos by utilizing these constructs within health interventions to facilitate increased cultural congruence with the belief systems and practices of the Latino population. And when I'm saying this, I don't want anyone to take, oh, this is the model, this is the recipe, right? This works I think, very well with immigrant populations, probably doesn't with people who've been here a couple generations. But these are some of the values that I think are very important. It also facilitates the reinforcement of the positive aspects of being Latino and allows health and human service providers to work from a place of assets versus deficits. So we're looking at resiliency versus pobrecito, right, poor thing, which will resonate more effectively with Latino patients and clients and give them a place of strength from which to adhere to whatever treatment or protocol they're engaging in. And this is particularly at a time when there's a lot of negativity toward Latinos because of the immigration debate. Just the other day, they were blaming the whole economic crisis on Latino immigrants, and I thought, oh no, what's next, right? This is on the news. And it helps facilitate an understanding of the need to transcreate as opposed to translate, to prevent context from being lost in any communication. And to illustrate the model more effectively, I've put the what I think are the real positive aspects in green, the neutral ones in yellow, and the one negative one in red. And as a Latino wannabe, when I look at this, I see that that's a lot of positive characteristics, right? These are really, really positive characteristics. When I look at things like confianza or trust, right? Who wouldn't want this in their healthcare dynamics? Simpatía, familismo, personalismo, right? And sympathy, it's not actually sympathy, and I've got it defined at the end of the presentation, but it's really the willingness to, the grace to understand another's perspective. It's more like compassion. Familism, personalism, respect, and what we call comunitarismo, o comunidadismo. And presentismo is in yellow. It could be positive, it could be negative. It's a real positive thing when you're going to a Latino party. You'll never see a party that starts at 11 and ends at 1, right? Just doesn't happen. There's more spontaneity to going to parties than timing it. No one's looking at their watch thinking I'm imposing on my host at this time. So there's some positive things, and if we can intervene at this moment, maybe presentismo can be an asset. So I think we need to think of temporal issues when we're working with this. And I think also we need to understand that a lot of people are having to live within the present because the present is what is around immediate concerns for survival. And the only negative one is fatalismo, right? And I always think about, you know, when you say buenas noches at the end of the night and someone tells you, si Dios quiere, me levanto mañana, right? If God wants, I'll wake up in the morning. And I always want to throw in that other, you know, God helps those who help themselves. So, you know, so there's some other dichos that we can use to counter that very effectively. So I want to talk a little bit about the historical progression of this project. With the support of the Office of Minority Health, NCLR, which I worked with, conducted a national needs assessment, 14 sites, including Puerto Rico. San Isidro was one of the sites. We did focus groups with 322 HIV-positive and at-risk Latinos. Actually, only 16% of that sample were HIV-positive. Many of them were at-risk. Actually, 201 were in the focus groups. And the rest were in in-depth interviews. All the in-depth interviews were of HIV positives. And based on community recommendations, we decided to do a Promotores project because that's what we were hearing from the communities. And we wanted to define the Latino U.S. So that was El Paso, San Isidro, and Hattiesburg. And there's an article that was published on the original study, which you guys can take a look at. It's in the Journal of Immigrant and Minority Health. I think they publish. They're one of the best journals because they really publish this stuff, and a lot of others are a little bit more difficult to publish in. So we wanted to increase awareness of HIV/AIDS through the development of a media kit, increase HIV testing rates through the use of a family-centered Promotores model, create and test a family-centered Promotores health model for possible replication. This was funded by OMH, and we conducted outreach to Latinos in the southern United States. And we wanted to share a prevention message through a culturally linguistically relevant charla and testing referral, and gathering Latinos' impressions of the charla and the material effectiveness and whether we had an impact on testing. So we developed some culturally and linguistically appropriate materials. We used a novelita concept, so we took some quotes, so we took some contextual information from the transcripts of the focus groups and the interviews, and we wrote stories around them. And almost a million of these have been sent out to states throughout the U.S. and 6 Latin American countries. So these are still being requested and still being used. And I think that even though we first published these in 2003, one of the reasons why they reflect so well the community is because they were very contextualized. And Kaiser just agreed we didn't have a lot of budget, so we would print them in Hong Kong, and Kaiser just agreed to print them for us if they were able to brand them as well. So now we have a, they're going to be printed for us. We used outreach cards or tarjetitas, and everything from the size of the tarjetita and the information the promotores really helped us with. Public service announcements, we were able to get some Latino stars, and as well as Reba McEntire to donate her set to do some filming. And we did a press guide, which was a media guide that we created. The expectations were that Hattiesburg would complete 1,200 contacts, that San Isidro and El Paso would complete 1,960. Hattiesburg wasn't, we always try to pick up one organization that hasn't had any experience with Promoteria. We wanted 25% of the contacts to be evaluated. We wanted to increase HIV testing just overall by 5% in Mississippi and 10% in El Paso and San Isidro. And you can see these were the number of contacts in El Paso, San Isidro, and Hattiesburg, the percent of the target, the number of evaluations. So we even received more evaluations. We didn't want the process to be so burdensome to the community-based organization that what they were doing was only evaluating. And we really wanted the promotores to be able to decide which context worked best for evaluation. We had more males than females. The mean age of the sample participants was 30 years old. 70% were foreign-born, 65% of those were from Mexico, 30% were U.S.-born, 55% were single, married, or living with partners, and single includes those who are single, divorced, and widowed. Children, 80% had children, 66% Spanish, 21% English, and 13% both languages. In terms of their exposure, one of the things we wanted to find out is what they had been exposed to. So some had previously read HIV info, had seen HIV information on television, had seen HIV commercials on television, had heard HIV information on the radio. So you can see these were the yeses and these were the noes. So there was still a big chunk of people who really hadn't heard. In terms of the charla evaluation, 96% found the charla very useful. And 71% said very useful, and 25% said useful. From the full sample, significant predictors for a higher charla rating were had seen a doctor in the past year or had previously tested for HIV, which we know there's a heightened response associated with having a history of testing. And among foreign-born participants, having previously tested for HIV was positively associated with a higher charla rating. You can see in looking at what was significant, for the full sample speaking English, for the foreign-born speaking English, so 0.05, has children, doctors speak Spanish. For the full sample, HIV radio info, so we know that the media definitely has an impact in both Spanish, in both the foreign-born and the full sample, reading HIV information. In the U.S., 25 months to 7 years. In the U.S., 86 months to 20 years, so we know that there could be that being here longer probably is going to impact that, and in the U.S., 20 years or less. So this is another reason why I think the promotores are so effective, is that they're probably getting to the population who perhaps hasn't been there, who might need this information more. In terms of significant predictors of the likelihood to test for HIV within 6 months post-charla, in terms of foreign-born, we've got females. So foreign-born females, but not the full sample, are males, spoke both languages, has heard HIV information in the past, and are married or living with partner, which really points to the use of familismo within the context of what we're talking about when we're talking about HIV testing. In terms of both languages, full sample, not for the U.S.-born, but for the foreign-born, has heard HIV information, married or living with partner. So the promotores provided charla participants with a tarjetita. Out of the 1,246 people who tested with HIV, 50% of men and 60% of women had made direct contact with the promotora. 47% of men and 57% who tested presented the outreach card. So we knew that it couldn't be something so small, but it also couldn't be something that would stick out of a pocket. So it was small enough to fold over, provide them with an address, and hide in the pocket, right? And so actually the size was very, very important. 64% of men and 59% of women had previously tested for HIV. So in terms of behaviors, you can see that of the 707 men who tested for HIV, 54% had engaged in vaginal sex, 17% anal sex with other men, 18% anal sex with women, 26% had oral sex with men, and 40% had oral sex with women. Of the 539 women, 66% had engaged in vaginal sex, 15% had had anal sex. And I think that this really points to an issue of no longer really looking at anal sex as not one population's behavior, right, but is very, very prominent within the heterosexual population. 38% had oral sex with males and 4% with females. So we found that previous exposure to HIV-related information was an important predictor of intention to test. That's, again, really pointing to why we want the promotores out there. Foreign-born females appear to be a particularly important group to target with HIV testing efforts. Those who were married were more likely to test within the next 6 months. And that points to two things. One of the things that we found out in our initial needs assessment, and we're seeing in terms of prevalence data, is that marriage is a risk factor for many, many women. And when we look at data from Mexico, I think it's 50 to 60% of women with AIDS are married and have only had one sexual partner. So again, this we really need to begin to explain this whole issue within the context of family. Over half of the participants who HIV tested provided the outreach card. 54, as I said, with the I won't review the sexual behaviors because we already went over them. But this was a woman in Mississippi who was living in a trailer park, and she told us, the disease has been stereotyped. Everybody thought this disease only affected gay males, prostitutes, and drug addicts. Nobody ever thought about how this would affect our families. And we were able to go into the trailer park and provide testing for her whole family. So I want to talk just, do I have 2 minutes? Can I have 2 minutes? Are we out of time? I'm way, way over. Okay. We are? Can I? Yeah, let's open it up to questions. One thing I do want to say, and hopefully by next year, I didn't have it on time to really talk to APHA, to present it to APHA, but hopefully next year we'll be able to talk about the Salud es Cultura project. The one thing that I do want to say is this, you know, we talk a lot about stigma, but we aren't focusing on stigma oftentimes. And within the Latino community, we found that stigma is associated with estigmata, which are marks of God, right? Which make it very, very problematic to begin to understand how we address the whole issue of stigma, which is what we've done with this. So, anyway.
Well, thank you, and let's give a round of applause to our presenters today. And sorry, I ran over time a little bit. But as I mentioned earlier, if you don't have access to the online presentations, we have a sign-up list. We can send you the slides. If you have any questions, if anybody wants to stick around, have any questions, you're more than happy to ask. Anybody have any questions? If not, you can come and talk to us. Okay, well, thank you.
Together. And then that kind of progressed the training. So it started out, you know, very individual, looking within yourself, finding that power, finding that confidence, finding that voice, and then it went into the speaker spirit. We also had them do a component where there was community involvement. So they got incentives for certain activities that they did. Most people gave them was we gave them a lot of money to get involved in the planning process. Very dependent. So we gave certain people a number of points for activity
services in the same way.
Every year point, the amount were the ones that and really spoke to the empowerment process. So it wasn't just volunteering to be awesome. It was go to the planning room, be on the floor, speak at a college, those parts of the volunteering. We really try to encourage those. So we gave them more money. And that process, I think, was helpful getting them to do that. And then we had
less praise.
Dinners where we invited everybody to come.
Now they're part of the
nonprofit. Another component is involving the family.
The burden of
a lot of activities where we invite the family. So a lot of the educational activities are for the family. It's only the opportunity to open to the clients themselves. So we definitely encourage family-type activities within the program. It really brought them a lot closer and opened up dialogue between family and that's pretty much. So yeah, I can send you this one too. And I can send you more information too, because I have the whole program description and stuff like that. No, now they are actually trained peer advocates and health educators.
We just send them the right one.